here's a good one. We need to repeal that stupid ass Sparky's fucking law. Yo, hey, look at my fish. It's following Sparky's law because the pectoral fin is still touching the tip of the water.
There are certainly bigger fish, faster fish, and stronger fish, but few can compare to wild steelhead. They're an icon that embodies strength and resilience. They are a fleeting connection to a wild world that is disappearing before our eyes. Wild steelhead are ingrained with an unrelenting tenacity that enables them to power themselves hundreds of miles upstream, and hooking one is a direct connection to the raw power of nature. Welcome to the Adipose, the voice of the Wild Steelhead Coalition. In fish conservation, it isn't always about the big wins. Success often comes in small steps and can come from underestimated sources. And sometimes it's just about seeing a need and taking personal initiative. Naivete can sometimes be your friend and a motivator. But if there's one thing we've learned over the years, rule changes that benefit wild steelhead are often controversial, and you have to have a thick skin.
Hi, I'm Rich Sims. Back in 2001, when we found the Wild Steelhead Coalition, one of our founding board members was Ryan Petzold. It was interesting because there was this 19-year-old kid with dyed hair working behind the counter of Ted's Sporting Goods in Linwood, Washington. And I'd sit there and scratch my head, why is this kid interested in wild steelhead conservation?
It's interesting. Steelhead were something, for whatever reason, from a very young age that just always fascinated me. I didn't have parents that fished. I had, grandfather that fished a little bit, more for salmon than for steelhead. But there was just something about them that always fascinated me. And so when I got into fishing, steelhead is what I gravitated to. And through that kind of passion for fishing and for steelhead, I started working at Ted Sports Center when I was 15 years old. I spent a lot of time reading a lot of the old books on, the Trey Combs and Bob Arnold and all the famous books on steelhead fishing and the old stories about how great it used to be, realizing that before I'd even caught my first steelhead, we were in an era of diminishing returns. And if I wanted to be, 15, 16, and be able to catch fish for the rest of my life, something had to be done. It was obvious at that very point in time, very early on, that it was all going to go away very quickly if we didn't step in.
But deep down, I knew that he had a passion for this. And I remember talking about this to my father-in-law, who was an older, old guard steelhead fisherman, and talking about how annoying Ryan was about it. And he said, you got to give this kid a chance.
And this is, we think of it, this is the heyday, to some extent. Today we look back at it and go, those were the good old days, right? Who would have thought that in like 2022, we'd be like, oh, remember 2000? That was the good old days. Well, 2000 yeah. Wasn't the good old days, right? In my view, it was the good old days. But, you speak to folks like Rich here, and it wasn't the good old days. Understanding that and hearing, Rich talk about, I think, growing up in Paulsbow and fishing the rivers of Hood Canal, those used to have great steelhead runs, and seeing those diminish at that point in time. And just see, the pattern was obvious what was going to occur, and that if we didn't step up and do anything, the same fate was going to fall the Skycomish, the Skagit, the Olympic Peninsula, which we're faced with right now. It was going to fall upon the great rivers of British Columbia. I consider myself blessed to have caught a Thompson River steelhead. No one's ever going to catch a Thompson River steelhead again.
Yeah, it's pretty easy just to go fishing and just feel like somebody else is going to do something right. And at the end of the day, it's all about, doing something. And again, no one has to ask for permission to do something. It's all about what's inside you, what you believe is right. If there's a specific thing that you're really passionate about, you just kind of go for it, right?
Finding the low-hanging fruit. What could we do? What could have immediate impact? Internet bulletin boards have been around for a few years, right? And they're the big thing at the time. It led to a proliferation of just poor fish handling, the desire to get the hero shot, right? And so to constantly see fish, and I think from well-intentioned anglers, right? This isn't a story of like fly fishermen versus gear anglers or versus pluggers or side drifters, like everyone was guilty in the community of poor fish handling practices. And a lot of them just weren't aware of it. And it was like dragging a fish up on the rocks to get a picture, holding a fish out of water too long to get a picture, right?
We didn't know what we know now. And I think a lot of people felt the fish were a lot more resilient than they are. And what we're kind of learning now is like, you know, the way we handle them even impacts their productivity and their spawning. You know, it's amazing the things that we're learning with this now.
At least in Washington, I think it's common across all states, is the ability for the citizen to step up and propose regulations that they think will benefit the resource. And so that year, that was 2004, I believe, that was a major cycle year for rule changes. And it was obvious that something that needed to be done. And the idea wasn't to eliminate photos of people holding steelhead. The idea was to provide guidance and to provide in some way to quantify what is good and what is bad fish handling practices. Because at the time, enforcement agents, there was nothing in the law. There was really no way for an enforcement agent, a game agent, to write a ticket to someone for not handling fish correctly. So the idea was just to provide something, a guidance, such that, hey, like, obviously this person let this fish flop in the boat and it's probably not going to survive, is now they had or would have a way. That was the idea. It's for them to, you know, hold anglers accountable to how they treated the resource. You know, drafted a rule proposal, submitted to the WDFW, and obviously these are public, and, you know, we used the power of the internet at the time to share, you know, what we were thinking as an organization, what I was thinking just as an angler in terms of getting this rule passed, why we thought it was a good rule. It was well written. And obviously the flack was immediate, right? The pushback was immediate, right? Like, we, you know, fear yeah. of like not being able to have a hero photo with their 30-pound steelhead. That's what everyone was scared of at the time.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, well, not necessarily interesting. It's no surprise that the staff biologists were looking at this and just going, this is no brainer. I mean, this will help limit the impact on the resource. And so they were the ones that actually recommended that it gets adopted.
It was controversial at the time. And I think we did a lot to, as an organization, to support the rule, to sell the rule broadly, because at the end of the day, this is voted on upon the commission, and the commission takes public feedback. And so we wanted to assure that the public feedback would be supportive of this rule to ensure that it would pass, because we just felt it was just necessary. The WDFW at the time, you know, generally there was a perception amongst conservation anglers that they weren't forward thinking. They didn't care about the resource. They didn't care about wild steelhead. They cared solely about opportunity. They cared solely about commercial interests. Kind of a relief to know that there are actually people within the commission, people within the agency that, you know, were supportive of something that was controversial, but more importantly, was very much conservation minded.
So it was adopted. There was fallout. It's funny because people started calling it Sparky's rule or Sparky's law, right?
I think, I can't remember exactly what fisheries class it was. It was like 323. It was something. And fisheries building down at the south end of the campus at UW. And I was just walking down the sidewalk one day and I just heard him yell, Sparky! And it stuck. And I think Sparky was just like, because I like to say it's because a lot of enthusiasm, but it might even because I just kind of was kind of bouncing off the walls always. The rule that the commission passed was more broad-based. The rule is any fish to be released cannot be fully removed from the water. And it applies to, which is good, it applies to salmon in the saltwater, which is really important if you think about it. And what's interesting, I think, you know, maybe talk about this, is that it's become more commonplace for states to adopt similar regulations, right? Just to put, you know, restrictions on, you know, how fish are to be handled if they're to be released.
It's really kind of cool because you see a really strong movement now of keeping fish wet, which is a great thing.
Yeah, because it was controversial, right? You know, so putting something controversial forward that, you know, it wasn't just feedback online, it was feedback in person. I mean, there's, you know, the people said it's not necessary, it doesn't hurt the fish. You know, I don't get a good grip and grin photo. You know, a lot of guides hated it, right? And one thing that's interesting is I think a lot of people said it was just a feel-good regulation. Like, it's not really going to do anything, which, I don't know, I just don't think that not fighting for what you believe in, because the negative is, well, it's feel good. I don't know. Just seemed just not a good defense.
You know, sometimes you just have to ignore the noise and just realize, you know, hey, if I got science on my side, or, you know, this is something that can benefit the fish, I think it, you try to do it.
Yeah, and the science was on our side. I mean, the science was on our side at the time, and I think the science has only evolved such that it just proves our view at the time even more correct, right? Like, just more and more research being done, the importance of good fish handling. I mean, if we want to have opportunity, like, let's be honest, like, we all want to go catch wild steelhead, right? Like, that's kind of why we're here. But we're not going to catch wild steelhead. We're not going to fish for wild steelhead if we believe it's going to harm the resource, especially given the current state of the resource. So
one thing that's really interesting too is how everybody cheated when the rule was adopted. And you see pictures of people with the whole fish out of the water, one fin touching the water, and just trying to skirt the issue. You know, to that effect, I mean, they were still handling the fish over a cushion of water, right? Yep. So it wasn't like the fish were on the rocks or anything like that. So right away, it still was helping do a better job in how you're handling the fish. But yeah, I mean, you still saw people with the fin touching the water.
So there was, it was controversial, but there was a couple guides, you know, one that I know well that, you know, he changed his fish handling practices, right? Because he had to. And look, he was never one to not take care of fish. He was the first guide on the peninsula to adopt catch release wild steelhead, right? In his boat, you know. And he said, yeah, it'll change some things I do. You know, I was never worried about how he was handling fish, but it changed, you know, how he was handling fish, or he had to how he had to handle fish for photos, and others were able to see that, right? So it was like, hey, if so-and-so like can get good pictures with fish and take care of them, then maybe I can do that, right? And I think that was, again, going back to, you know, the importance of the law and why it was so helpful, is it just brought so much attention to the issue.
We got to get better handling of the fish. I mean, that's so important. And especially being stewards of the resources, anglers, you know, it's the least that we can do. And we just need people to understand that a little bit more.
Yeah, and how can we fight for wild steelhead and fight for, ultimately, at the end of the day, which is other user groups sacrificing opportunity to save wild steelhead when we as a user group aren't going to take as much care of the resource as we can?
You know, you have to lead by example. And I think that's what we have to do as a community of anglers. We have to lead by example, because if we're not leading by example, everybody else is going to think that they can still go on doing what they're doing without making changes.
Or it's hard for us to fight what we believe in, because then we look like hypocrites.
Correct.
You know, it's just, it's simple as that.
Sparky's Law also created peer pressure and discouraged posting images of fish held out of the water. Peer pressure can be a powerful
thing. Yeah, it's funny you mention that, because like everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people like to be the internet police, right? And it was funny, after the law was passed and the peer pressure, I mean, a lot of people, you know, they accepted it, they went on to adopt it, but suddenly all these people came out of the woodwork that, because, you know, people love to fight on the internet, it was a reason or an excuse for people to call out other people. Hey, that steelhead you caught, that fish is out of the water, you're breaking the law.
I think what's really amazing is a lot of times when we do this type of thing, these small steps or these small things, they actually have a lot of unforeseen benefits in the end. And one of the benefits, I would argue, is it's amazing the new, more creative, spectacular fish photography that we see. You know, to me, it's really created some of the best photography that I've seen over the years.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think another benefit of the rule, right, with the passage of the rule, was that it actually proved that we could do something, that we had an idea, we had science to back it up, we proposed it to WDFW and to the commission, and it was passed. What was interesting is that after the law was adopted, that kind of quieted down. To some extent, the sentiment shifted. One interesting post was from someone on the board, that same board that had the same kind of, you know, stupid fucking Sparky's Law post. Someone commented, "I've gotten to where I like the law. I know why WDFW adopted it after seeing numerous fish bouncing around inside of boats on the river, and wild steelhead drug up on muddy and sanding banks to flop around and such. But the law causes so much discussion that I can't help but believe it causes every one of us to think about how we handle and release fish more than we otherwise would. I never used to give it a thought to holding fish out of the water, but now I do."
It's all about the small successes, and I think that's what people forget about. It's these small successes that compound each other that creates the bigger successes to help us move forward, to actually ensure that we have fish in the future and we have future opportunity and that we do well for the resource. I'll just leave it at that.
No, I agree.
Stay tuned for the upcoming Steelhead in Our Hands campaign, a collaborative effort between Keep Fish Wet and the Wild Steelhead Coalition designed to advocate for science-based best catch and release practices to create better outcomes for each wild steelhead that we catch and release. We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Adipose and heed the call to join the growing number of advocates who are fighting to create a better future for wild steelhead. We must fight for these fish with the same tenacity and dedication we have in the pursuit of them. Together, we have the power to chart a brighter future for wild steelhead. Please push the subscribe button, take a minute to rate, review, and share. Be sure to tune in for the next episode of The Adipose.